Thank you very much, Hillary. Our next speaker will be Dr. Chris Feudner. Dr. Feudner is a pediatrician, epidemiologist, historian, and ethicist at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia and University of Pennsylvania. He focuses on improving the lives of children with complex chronic conditions and their families. Chris has had years of experience with research projects and program development, all while taking care of children.
Thank you, and good afternoon. I'll pause here just to comment before I give my disclosure that I'm going to be focusing on some of the key terms that have already been raised, like the degree to which healthcare worker immunization actually offers protection to patients, how that mandated or voluntaristic act of getting vaccinated is consonant with and helps augment and develop professionalism, and then the appropriate uses of power within organizations, not just at the state level, but at the organizational level, to actually induce the kind of behavior we want in our healthcare workers to take the best care of patients. I have no relationships to divulge other than the fact I work at a large children's hospital, and as I'll talk about, we have a policy there of mandated flu vaccine. Let me be clear at the outset, even though I am going to raise some reservations. I am a huge fan of immunizations. They are the by far most effective and cost-effective form of medical care that science has provided to us. They offer huge public health benefit that's almost beyond calculation. And everyone, absent a medical contraindication, should, in my view, be fully immunized on schedule. And that, if anything, healthcare workers, because of the bond that they have, the duty that they have to protect patients, should go out of their way to get immunized. I also want to say that, as I mentioned already, I work at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and we've had a mandatory policy for healthcare workers to get immunized for the entire hospital. Anybody who participates in our hospital's business, from vendors all the way to the head of the medical staff, there's no exemption in terms of the range of staff, it's everybody's included, is required to actually be immunized by a certain date of the year or they are not allowed back in the hospital. I want to make clear, and I think all of us feel the same sense, if I'm speaking for myself, I'm not speaking for my hospital, I'm not speaking for any organization, and I'm grateful that I work at a place that is very supportive of having dialogue across dissenting points of view. When I began to think about giving a talk on this topic, I actually had a conversation with my 8-year-old son. We were out for a bike ride, and I said to him, "What do you think? Do you think that people who take care of patients in the hospital should get a flu shot like you just got to help protect patients from getting the flu from them?" And he looked at me and more or less said, "Dad, that's a no-brainer. Of course they should." So I am going to go against the wisdom of my 8-year-old and express some reservations. First, when we talk about protecting patients, it's important, or the public welfare or the public health, that we actually give some sense of to what degree are we actually conferring protection through our interventions. I could say that I am going to protect you in the front row from something, but if it's such a small little degree of added benefit, is that really worthy of saying that it's a public health benefit that should trump all individual considerations, as opposed to a huge public health benefit that perhaps should? And in fact, as we've heard, has in the past. The data supporting the claim that healthcare worker flu vaccination will reduce hospital-based nosocomial flu is tenuous, and in my view, actually somewhat surprisingly thin. I will defer to the next speaker most review of that data, but most of the data actually comes out of settings that are not hospitals. They're actually more or less nursing homes. And as I look at my hospital with people coming and going, most of whom in the course of a day, or at least a good fraction of them, are visitors, it's actually hard to know whether the kinetics of how flu enters the hospital and may infect people, it's hard to predict. Second, flu is unlike other vaccines, not all of them, but it's unlike many of them, in that it's a seasonal requirement, that the flu vaccine varies annually to keep pace with the ever-shifting flu germ itself. That may change in the future, but for now this is certainly true. and that the effectiveness year to year is somewhere between 70% to 90% when the strains are well matched. And in years where the strain is not well matched, which is not an infrequent occurrence, the effectiveness goes way down from 50% effectiveness down to nil. That means that we're not looking at an intervention that offers absolute protection. Third, the cost effectiveness of mandated programs has not been estimated, let alone established. For instance, how much does it cost to actually have the legal issues sorted out when employees file grievances? Whether they are going to be borne out in the courts or not as being legitimate, just there are a number of issues that even if you put in place a mandate and it may look to be less expensive, there's a back-end cost as you actually have to deal with the variety of issues that come up. And the question really is whether the opportunity costs of this form of actually trying to protect patients is really giving the benefit, given all the personnel time and the financial resources that are required to actually put in place a mandate and then to maintain it year after year after year. Are there better ways that we could be using the staff employment of our hospital to actually improve patient outcomes in a way that would actually offer benefit to patients? Fourth, and this is these are going to get a little bit more ethics-oriented, although everything I've said up to this point has to do with risk and benefit, is that the mandate dodges the issue of why can't we get immunization rates higher than 40% amongst people who ought to be very well educated to the advantages of immunization. I think that's a disturbing problem that we should take it upon ourselves as an opportunity to sort of be in the ring with that problem with our colleagues to figure out what are the barriers that would enable us to get to 90% adult acceptance of vaccines with a group of people who are all motivated to do good for others. It shifts, a mandate does, the responsibility of professional ethics from an individual to an organization. I used to roll up my sleeve on an annual basis because I thought it was the right thing to do for patient care, and it was a personal responsibility that I felt. Now that it's mandated, I actually cannot really say that that's why I do it anymore. I do it because it's mandated and I have to comply. That's a subtle shift, but important. When you particularly think about how there are so many other areas of what we need for patient safety where I need staff to actually take it upon themselves as a personal responsibility to actually stop the medication order because they're afraid it's the wrong dose, or be able to spot a risk in the physical environment and say, I need to talk to my supervisor about that. That's not safe for patient care. That I don't want to envision a healthcare system which has a sort of appeal to it, if you think about it one way, of all of these variation in individual practices is taken away because the organization tells you what to do. But that carves out of the individuals their own inner sense of what's the right thing to do and the responsibility of following that up. It fuels vaccine blowback. I'm very aware of this. In the first work I ever did thinking about immunizations more from the perspective of the school mandates is that there is a desire on my part to not embolden and empower the countervailing arguments against vaccines, which I think are often ill-informed in certain regards, particularly for the vaccines that have sustained high levels of protection with very safe profiles. But this is the kind of mandates are, the kind of thing that the media loves to talk about and make it sound like there's actually disadvantages to the vaccine, when in fact that's not really for debate here. The debate is off on another point, and I think that this allows a platform for some of the people who want to talk about being anti-vaccine. Which comes to the last point that I'll raise, that mandates raise important issues about power, equity, labor relations, and civil liberties. And in particular, what I find important is, which I raised at the beginning, this quantification. How big a public health benefit are we talking about? Are we talking about a huge benefit in which individual liberties ought to be put to one side in order to attain that? Or are we talking about a much smaller or uncertain public health benefit? Just because it's a vaccine does not guarantee that you're talking about the former, not the latter. So what are alternative strategies? One is to do what we do with all other vaccines. It's a condition of employment. And I have no problem saying if you want to work at our hospital, you're going to sign an employment contract that says on an annual basis you will get immunized. And that's a voluntaristic act. People do not need to be employed by our hospital. And once they've voluntaristically signed that document, I think it is a very different kettle of fish or whatever the metaphor would be. The second is to mount effective immunization campaigns. The numbers of 40% that are often cited in terms of the kinds of success rate, I think, are not inevitable. And I'll say a little bit more about that in a minute. But you have to be willing to pay for them. A lot of people, I think, want to see this as something that it should not hurt my bottom line. It should be just something that everybody rolls up their sleeve and I just pay for the flu vaccine and the nurse's time to administer it. But to mount an effective flu annual campaign costs money. It takes a lot of personnel time, as I suspect it will prove to be the case that actually even having a mandated policy is going to incur expenses. And then the third alternative is to take a step back, take a deep breath, and evaluate, is this the battle that is the most important battle we should be fighting for patient safety, deflecting a lot of time and effort away from potentially other endeavors that may improve patient outcomes more? So let me talk about what our experience was at our hospital in the last 3 minutes that I have here. This was published in Vaccines, so if you want to go find it, you can. We had this level of immunization hospital-wide going from 2004 up to 2009. 2009, before we introduced the mandate, we were at 92% immunization coverage. So anybody who tells me that you can only get to 40%, I'm sorry, that's all we can do. I really don't know what they're doing, and I wonder whether it's as fixed a ceiling as people have led it you to believe. I also say that I'm very fortunate to work where I do. We can do remarkable things because this is a highly motivated workforce. They actually do view it as their personal responsibility to go out of their way. And with that, you can achieve these types of rates. Here is the timeline, and again, you're not going to be able to see all this. It's more than I can cover in this talk, but here are the steps that the infection control staff actually took year by year by year to actually climb up to that 92% immunization rate amongst healthcare workers. Now, you can see that this is a very broad, multi-tiered, multimodal intervention to achieve that kind of immunization strategy, and thus the rates that I showed. I just show this as proof of concept, that anybody who says it's impossible to get the type of target rates that have been set forth at greater than 90%, well, it's not impossible. So, as I sum up, viewed through the very limited framework of should I take my sleeve, roll it up, and get immunized, the answer, as my 8-year-old son said, is it's a no-brainer. But viewed from a broader perspective, of actually how do we optimize? We have thousands of patients who come into our hospital. How do I do the best job, and how does our organization do the best job of helping everyone leave as healthy as possible when they're leaving the hospital? I think we should pause and say, is this the topic that we want to be devoting this amount of time, effort, and attention to? And it's not going to go away. It's going to be every year, year after year after year, as opposed to the other ways that we might be able to optimize patient outcomes. Thank you very much.